Today's scripture comes from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 to 8. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to throw away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. The word of the Lord.
There's a psalm, Psalm 82, and it's a prayer to God. And in this particular psalm, the person who's praying wonders why God doesn't seem to be on the job very effectively. The prayer has something to do with the premise that it's God's job when there's a problem going on in the earth, it's God's job to jump in and solve that problem. And so in this particular prayer, we see this concept of God, why are you not doing the things you're supposed to do? Why aren't you curbing evil? Why aren't you helping people who are good and who need help? Why are there so many things messed up in the world today? And I have to tell you that sometimes I have the same thoughts, and I have them with a lot of passion. And I sometimes wonder whether there's been some misunderstanding about what God's job is, because it's my understanding that it's God's job to help people and reward people and encourage people who are doing good, and it's God's job to stop some of the things bad that are happening, and it's God's job to be full of love and full of power and make things go right for us. And so I myself sometimes question whether God is, what's wrong, where's the disconnect here? Why are there so many problems that are going on in the world? And why are so many people that I love and that I'm around all the time having such a struggle? And why does it seem like it's so hard to get a prayer answered sometimes? So, that's the topic today. Now, the reason that that's the topic today is because Jordan is picking the topics for January. And his goal in January is each week to give me a subject that that will make me squirm and will make me work as hard as I have to work all year to try to come up with a sermon on the subject. Now, here's the question. Why does God allow bad things to happen? That's Jordan's question to me today to work with you on in this sermon. Jordan knows there's no answer to that question, and he knows that I'm going to fail in this sermon. I think he's trying to get my job. He knows that if he makes me look this bad, you know, he can maybe take over the big office up there. But anyway, that's the truth. You know what? There is no answer to that question. There really is no answer to the question. Why does God let so many bad things happen? There's no answer to the question, if God is so loving and if God is so powerful, why don't we see more changes going on? There's no answer to that question. All I can do with you this morning is to share with you how I try to navigate through my own faith that problem and my own frustrations and my own doubts and the questions that I have about how God is working or sometimes doesn't seem to be working in our world. So that's what I got for you this morning, just kind of how I try to handle my frustrations, my angers, my befuddlement, my confusion on this. Now, so there's several things, and I'm not sure that this sermon really has it doesn't have a flowing structure. So I'm just going to throw some things out there to you. So don't try to make it, don't try to figure out, oh, you know, this is a carefully crafted sermon. It's not. It's some ideas thrown in here, okay? So here's the first thing. I always try to maintain my belief in both the power of God and the love of God. I try to make sure that I hold on to both of those. Jesus says, it's several places, but let's just pull one verse out. In Mark 10, Jesus says, with God, all things are possible. Jesus affirms the power of God. Jesus affirms the omnipotence of God. It means all powerful, all right? And a little later in the New Testament, in the wake of Jesus' life and crucifixion and resurrection, the writer of 1 John says, God is love. And it's written in such a way that that's the definition of God. It's a complete sense of who God is. God is love. Now, whenever we get into this difficult question, why does God not, you know, pull rank and solve these problems? It's because we're trying to hold these two concepts together. God is all powerful and God is all loving. And so whatever happens, no matter how confusing life gets and no matter how upset or how angry I get, I insist that I hold on to both of those, all right? Now, I got to tell you, it's not always easy to hold on to both of those. A number of years ago, I had a 12-year-old in my congregation, and he got leukemia. And we prayed mightily to God, his parents, his grandparents, the whole church, all of his friends, and we prayed to God. We were sure God had the power to change it if he wanted to. And we were sure God had the love to want to do that. Because after all, God's love was more than our love, and we wanted this kid to survive when he was 13 years old in a intensive care room in Carl Hospital. He died. And I was in the room with him when he died, and his parents were in the room, and his grandparents were in the room, and his aunts and his uncles and his cousins. There must have been 25 people in the room. And we had the funeral. There were 900 people that were there. And that next Sunday, it was really, I had a hard time with that. I had a hard time squaring the love and power of God with what I had seen happen and with this enormous pain that I had seen going with people that I love so dearly. And that Sunday, here's my theory about always maintaining both the power and the love of God. Every Sunday in a traditional service, the first hymn we sing is always a hymn about the power of God. In the traditional service, the second hymn we always sing, it's the one where we bring our joys and concerns forward, is always a hymn about the love of God. I've been in the ministry 45 plus years. If I pick the songs, always the first one is about the power of God and always the second is about the love of God so that I can every Sunday, no matter what's happened to me during the week, I can continue to be renewed and refreshed in those two themes. But that Sunday, after this child died, I announced the opening hymn about the power of God, and I sat down. I couldn't stand, and I couldn't sing it. That's how rattled I was. But by the second hymn, I was able to stand, and I was able to sing that hymn, and all the Sundays since, I've been able to stand. But you know what? It's not easy to hold both to the absolute power of God and the absolute love of God both, but I keep trying to do it. That's me. And I know it's hard, and sometimes I haven't been able to do it with 100% perfection. I've had my down times with that. But I always insist, I'm resolute to keep coming back to that. So that's one thing. Not to ever let go of those two beliefs. Now, a second thing that I want to say is, and this is going to be a little more complicated of a point, but I'll keep trying to explain it until half of you have a look of clarity on your face. So the second thing is, I do not think there's a problem with either God's love or with God's power. I think the problem we have is that we have a certain concept of what power is, and we have a certain concept of what love is, but that's not how, I mean, who created love? God did. Who created power? God did. And God did not create love according to our concept of what love is. And God did also did not create power according to our concept of what power is. So I think there is a bit of a misunderstanding there. Yes, God is all powerful and God is all loving, but these phenomena were not created in the sense that we understand them. They were created by God in a way that it challenges us to think in ways normally than we would think. So God does not do either love or power like we would if we were God. Thank goodness. God created both love and power to interact with each other. When we think of love, we think of love sort of theoretically all by itself. When we think of power, we think of power theoretically all by itself. And maybe they ought to get together and coordinate with each other in the way God is. But the way God created love and power, God created them in a paradoxical way. He created them to be opposites. And when you put them together in the same personality, the personality of God, then love and power, when they mix in God's personality, they become an unpredictable dynamic, not a static and mechanical pattern for how God operates, but they become sort of the yin and the yang of God. So, okay, you got a preacher with a Chinese wife, so you're going to have to put up with some Chinese concepts here, you know. And Jesus was Asian, so it's okay for us, you know, we don't always have to think Western. We can think Eastern once in a while, and sometimes it might help us understand a little more about what Jesus was talking about if we'll do that. But in the Chinese concept of the yin and the yang, The yin of the Chinese concept is the female. It's the receptive. It's the patient. It's the waiting. It's the responsive side of action and so forth in relationship. The yang is the male. It's the more assertive. It's the initiative. It's the pushing forward side. So sometimes we might think of the yin of God as sort of the love of God, if you want to. And we might think of the yang of God as the power of God, the arm of God. The yin of God is that part of God that's open to our prayers, that's receptive to us, that responds with compassion. The yang of God is the part of God that says, hey, I got some rules here, and I'm going to lay them down, and you need to follow them. Okay, so now here's the thing about the yin and the yang. In Western culture, when we take two things that are opposite of each other, we tend to think of them in a dualistic sense. So I want you to, in your mind, imagine a circle, okay? And imagine that there's a line down, imagine there's a straight line right down through that circle. And half the circle is all black and half the circle is all white. Picture that. A circle, line down the middle, straight line, half of it black, half of it white, okay? This is what we call, this is a Western type of thinking. It's dualistic thinking. We're either for something or against something. It's black and white. And this is the way it works. Power works this way. Love works this way. And, we got to keep them separate here. We got to have that line of distinction. And that's a dualistic way of thinking. It's very Western, okay? And here's what the Eastern people do with it and why they call it yin and yang. In the Eastern concept, and I know you've all seen this, all right? Circle again, all right? And the circle is divided, half and half, but the line is not a straight line. The line is sort of a fluid line, isn't it? And you kind of get the sense that it's not exactly set, all right? It's a curving, fluid line. And half the circle is black and half the circle is white, okay? With that curving, fluid line through it. Now, here's the thing about the black part, the part that's in black. There's a big white spot in the middle of it. And the part that's black, there's a big white spot in the middle of it. Did I say that right? Okay, that was a tricky one for me. Okay? And that's, okay, so when the Eastern people talk about the yin and the yang, they talk about a whole, which would be the circle. But, you know, sometimes in the midst of things that are really good, you can see some trouble. In the midst of some things that are really bad, you can see some good. And because life itself is dynamic, because life itself is full of relationships, our relationships to each other are kind of fluid, aren't they? Our relationships to nature, that's a kind of a fluid relationship. how we relate to God. I hope none of us if you've got any age on you, I hope you're not still relating to God in the same way as you were when you were 10. Okay? It's a growing, it's a fluid relationship. And we talk to God because we know it's a dynamic relationship. And so, what I want to say is that when we think about the question, why doesn't God just stop evil? Why doesn't God just use his power and stop evil? What I want to suggest, one thought, it doesn't totally answer the question, but one of the things that helps me to navigate my doubts and my questions is a realization that the love and the power of God is, they mingle together. And when I think of God's love and when I think of God's power, I think of things within God that are happening simultaneously, both the emptiness and the fullness of God simultaneously, both the female and the male aspects of God simultaneously. Now, if you're one of these tough people who doesn't want to hear anything about the female side of God, let me remind you, in the book of Genesis, when God created human beings, it is said in the book of Genesis, that God created human beings, male and female, all of us in the image of God. So while we may be very comfortable talking about the masculine images of God, because we've all been created in the image of God, any females in the group here, you're created in the image of God too, all right, that tells us something about God. So it helps to understand, for me anyway, that this concept of power and love doesn't fit. With God, it's different. God has a more fluid way of doing that. Okay, a third thing that's helpful for me. God, because God loves us, God has decided to share divine power with us. God does not hog all the power. That's a part of God's love. Now, if you think that's problematical for God, you're probably right. But God won't hog all the power. God gives people what we call agency. And he gives animals what we call agency. And he gives nature what we call agency. And when God has created people and when God has created the earth, when God creates even animals, God creates people and individuals and situations that have a mind of their own. And so, out of love, God shares power. God has decided to be relational rather than dictatorial. That's just how God chose to use power. Now, I want to share with you a little bit about how I see that affected personally. My grandson, Sean, just turned 2. And we have just discovered he has a mind of his own. And his first English word was no. And when he says it, he means it. All right? In other words, he's gaining power on his own. It's not a power that pleases his mother on all occasions, or his father, or anybody else that has to be around him. All right? His second word was cubs. Now, if there's a merciful God in heaven, why would God allow a child's second word to be cubs and embark on a life, as I have, of total misery and disappointment for decades and decades? So here's a child now who he has agency. He has freedom. He has choice. And it's remarkable to see how he has taken that gift, a gift of God, and a gift his parents have. You can't totally squelch it, but his parents are also delighted that he has choice and that he has a mind of his own. So here's what you can do with a mind of your own. When we arrived on Christmas Day, they live up in Lyle. When we arrived at Christmas Day, it was about 11 o'clock in the morning, and their front door has a... You open the regular door, and they have a full glass outer door. So we pull up, and here's Sean, all of his 2 feet tall person, And he's standing in the doorway, and he's watching us as we get out of the car, as we walk up the walk, as we open the door. And I pick him up, and he squeals as I hug him. All right? Now, I don't get that out of one of those dolls that you pull the string and it squeals. It's a powerful experience because he has his own mind. His own ability to have the light. He has his own ability to receive love, and he has his own ability now to start giving love. All right? And this is how God, this is how God chose to invest power, was in more love. So that we too, we're not puppets. We too have this ability now to experience love. But the more you see, the more you invest your power in love, as God has done, then the more it changes the very nature of your power and your love. So when we think about God, let me move on now. Let me move on to my next point. And I want to again focus on how power and love are meaningful only if they're in a relationship. When we think about power and when we think about love, we think of them as too absolute and too much on their own and too theoretically. But the whole purpose of power and love, it only emerges when we see power and love at work in a relationship. I'm reading through the novel Robinson Crusoe. And even if you haven't read the novel, you probably know the outline. This guy, he's on a ship, and the ship gets wrecked, and everybody else on the ship disappears, and he's the only one left, and he's on an island. And the first few days he's on, and there's nobody else on the island. There's nobody but him. And so the first few days the ship is still, the wreckage of the ship is still there. So he goes on it and he starts pulling stuff off the ship. And among other things, he pulls this big chest of money. Now, what are you going to do when you're on an island and there's nobody else there and there's only you? And he's thinking these thoughts. What am I going to do with this money? This money that I would give anything for when I was back in England or in Brazil. This money is totally meaningless in this setting. All right, you take money out of the setting of commerce, you take it out of the setting of relationships, and it loses all of its value. Okay, so you take love out of relationship and try to think of it theoretically, abstractly. You take power out of relationships, try to think about it abstractly and theoretically, and they have no meaning. Love and power only have meaning when we invest them in relationships. And when we invest them in relationships, they begin to morph and they begin to have a whole different understanding and a different dynamic for us. So I think sometimes, there are times, and maybe you're like this too, sometimes I think, you know, if I were God, you know, I'd solve that problem. And I'd sure get that person straightened out. And I'd put a stop to this, and I'd make sure this, if I were God, boy, would things be different if I were God, all right? So, but here's the thing. If I were God, I would be in a relationship with every single human being on the face of the earth, not just Christians, not just Americans. If I were God, I'd be in a relationship with every single human being. If I were God, I'd know all there is to know about nature, and I'd be in a relationship with every single plant, every single animal. If I were God, I would be in a relationship with parts of the cosmos that scientists don't even know exist yet. If I were God, I would be in all of these relationships. And everything I did with my power and everything that I did with my love would reflect all of these relationships that I have. You see, I'm not God. And I'm not in relationship with every single person or with all of the cosmos. I'm simply not God. And so I can't say what I would do with my power and with my love until, if I were God, until I'm in all of those relationships. Relationships change everything. And this is the fifth point I want to make. I sometimes think that I don't exercise my power enough as a pastor. And all due respect to my daughter, sometimes I look back and I think, I probably didn't exercise my power enough as a father. And almost every day with Jay, I think, I'm not exercising my power enough as a husband. Around here, I could do a lot more than I do. I mean, the book of discipline gives me a lot of power. The way the rules are structured, I could put an end to a lot more nonsense around here than I do. I could replace more people than I do. I could be a lot pushier than I am. I could be a lot tougher. And I'm that way in all of my relationships. You know, I really do possess the power. I could use it a lot more than I really do. So why don't I? Why don't I use that power? And when I think about that, maybe sometimes it's because I'm a little lazy or because sometimes I lack courage. But more often than not, I realize that if I used my power, to control situations here at the church more, if I use my power to try to control things at home more, if I use my power to try to control anything I'm a part of, stop and think about that for a moment. Oftentimes when we think of power, we think of control, right? Control comes from a Latin word. C-O-N, it's a compound Latin word. C-O-N-T, got that? R-O-L-L. That's not how you spell control in English, but that's where the Latin comes from. So to roll, okay, we're rolling along, right? Okay. The Latin word cont, C-O-N-T, means to stop something from rolling. It means to work against it. So to control somebody means to stop them from doing what they're doing, what they want to do, to stop them from thinking what they're thinking. To stop them from growing. To stop them from being somebody created in the image of God. And we don't like people who want to control us, but that's a form of power we could exercise. And sometimes we do. Sometimes that's the power that we know. Is the power simply to stop and put something down and destroy. Control comes from a Latin compound word, which means to stop and destroy. We control ants when they get in our kitchen. We control mice when they get in our homes. We try to control cancer cells. And it's a disaster when we try to control people. And so there's no way that I can have the power of control with people I love. Is there any other way to have power? Well, there's another word with a Latin compound. It's called authority. The word authority comes from a Latin word, which it's the word auctor. And auctor is the same Latin word from which we get the English word author. An author is somebody who creates. An author is somebody who has power. An author is somebody who develops. An author is often a co-author. An author is one who takes the pen and writes part of the story and then hands the pen off to the person we're in a relationship with. And sometimes God takes the pen and writes a well. And sometimes nature takes the pen and writes a part of the story. That's another whole different type of power. It's the power of authority, not the power of control. It's the power that comes from our creativity. It's the power God exercises. God has absolute power, and God, because of God's love, has decided to invest that absolute power in authority, not control. Sometimes when I ask the question, God, why aren't you doing the things I think you need to do? It's because God has chosen to exercise full divine authority through creativity, by being co-authors of our lives in the story of our world. Now, back to the beginning. Let me wrap up here. Jordan did give me a question for which there's no answer to. And it's a type of a question, I'm glad he gave it to me. I still like him. I'm glad he gave it to me because the question he gave me is a question that actually stops a lot of people from getting closer to God. It's the kind of question that has sort of become an obsession with people who see troubles or who see evil, and it's so hard to know how to deal with it. It's so hard to know how to figure God out in the midst of all of that. And this is a question that it's keeping people from God. And it may at times it's kept me from God. At times, maybe a number of you, it's kept you from God. So I think, even though I can't answer the question today, what I can answer is that there are ways we can navigate through those questions. There are ways we can navigate through those doubts. There are ways that we can strengthen our relationship with God. There are ways we can talk to each other and encourage each other. We'd like for the Bible to answer all of our questions, not raise them. But in this case, the Bible raises the question. And it seems like the Bible doesn't want us to have an answer, or otherwise it would be there pretty clearly. I think that God wants us to wrestle with the question, because we have been created in the image of God, and we too have been created with an enormous amount of power, each one of us, and an enormous capacity. And it's only as we wrestle with how we bring these two things together in a dynamic way in our relationships that we will begin to get at least a little glimpse of why we don't totally understand God either. May God bless us as we continue. Let's stay together while we're going.